down to his boots.
This is Grand Admiral Thrawn. You disappoint me, General Bel Iblis.
Booster looked at Bel Iblis. The general was still staring out the viewport, his face not betraying any emotion at all.
There's really no point in trying to maintain the charade,
Thrawn said.
But perhaps you need a more convincing demonstration.
It was as if someone behind Booster had suddenly yanked a carpet out from under his feet. Suddenly he was toppling forward, arms flailing madly as he fought to regain his balance. Around him came the sounds of consternation from the rest of the bridge crew. From somewhere beyond that came the ominous sound of creaking metal.
A small demonstration, as I said,
Thrawn continued, his tone almost bantering.
Your Star Destroyer is now totally helpless, pinned in place by approximately 50 of our heavy lift tractor beams.
Booster swallowed a curse that wanted desperately to come out. What was it with this ship and tractor beams, anyway? He started as Bel Iblis tapped him on the arm. The general was glaring at him, gesturing him impatiently toward the comm station. Booster glared back, took a deep breath.
Admiral Thrawn, sir, what are you doing?
He called, trying to mix respect and bewildered fear into his tone. The latter part took no acting whatsoever.
Sir, we have injured officers and crewers aboard.
That's enough.
Thrawn cut him off coldly. The attempt at casualness had apparently been too much for the red-eyed mongrel. It was back to being overbearing again.
I respect your courage in making this attempt, but the game is over. Must I order the turbo laser batteries to commence taking the ship apart?
Bel Iblis exhaled softly.
No need for that, Admiral, he called. This is General Bel Iblis.
Ah, General,
Thrawn said. Once again, he'd changed tone, Booster noted, this time switching from cold threat to the almost cordial, unspoken camaraderie between fellow professionals. The man was nothing if not versatile.
I congratulate you, sir, on your attempt, futile though it may have been.
Thank you, Admiral, Bel Iblis said. However, I suggest the success or failure of the operation has yet to be determined.
Do you now?
Thrawn said.
Well then, let us make it official. I hereby call on you to suspend your diversion and surrender your ship.
Bel Iblis glanced at Booster.
And if I refuse?
As I suggested earlier, General, you're lying helpless before me.
Thrawn said, his voice heavy with menace.
As my order, your ship will be systematically destroyed.
For a long moment, the bridge was silent. Booster watched Bel Iblis. Bel Iblis, in turn, was gazing out at the Star Destroyer standing in their path.
I need to discuss this with my officers,
he said at last.
Of course. Take your time. Only I suggest you don't take too much time. Your diversionary force is fighting valiantly, if ineffectually. But my patience toward them will not last forever. Interdictor cruisers are already moving into position to trap them there, and the various fighter commanders are pleading to be allowed to launch their TIEs and prey birds.
Understood, Bel Iblis said. I'll deliver my answer as quickly as possible.
He gestured to the comm officer to cut the transmission.
What are you going to do now?
Booster demanded. The thought of the errant venture ending up again in Imperial hands.
As I promised, I'm going to deliver my answer,
Bel Iblis said coolly.
Tanneris, Bodwai, where are those tractor beams originating? From the base or the defense perimeter?
I'm getting 38 from emplacements in the perimeter,
Bel Iblis' sensor officer reported.
15 more coming from the base itself, Bodwai added. They have their locations marked.
Thank you, Bill Ibley said. Simons, do we have any freedom of movement at all?
Not really, sir, the helmsman said. We're pinned pretty solidly in place.
What about rotational? Can we swivel around a vertical axis?
Yes, sir. Actually, I think we can, the other said, frowning at his displays. Probably no more than a quarter turn, though.
Not nearly enough to turn us around and get the blazes out of here,
Booster muttered.
Getting out isn't the goal,
Bell Iblis reminded him.
Simons, bring us around at 90 degrees to port side, or as near to that as you can manage. Port side turbo lasers and proton torpedo tubes, prepare to fire at the defense perimeter at my command, targeting the tractor beam emplacements holding us here. Starboard weapons, same thing, only targeting the emplacements on the base.
There was a chorus of acknowledgements. Booster gazed out at the base and the Star Destroyer standing ready in front of it. And as he watched, they started moving to the right, slowly and ponderously, but moving. He took a step closer to Bell Iblis.
You realize, of course, that you're not going to fool anybody with this,
he warned.
Least of all someone like Thrawn. He's going to see us targeting the tractor beams and start slicing the ship up beneath us.
Bell Iblis shook his head.
I don't think so. Not yet, anyway. All the evidence indicates that he's trying to rebuild the Empire. And a massive wreckage won't help him do that. What he really wants from us is a few high-ranking New Republic prisoners he can parade in front of potential converts to his cause.
Not to mention picking up an extra Star Destroyer to use against anyone who isn't so easily converted.
That too, Bell Iblis conceded. Bottom line, he's not going to start shooting until we're nearly free. Maybe not even then.
Booster grimaced. No, Thrawn would be in no hurry. Not with the errant Bencher on the wrong side of all that firepower waiting at the perimeter.
So how are you planning to get us out?
Bell Iblis shook his head.
I'm not trying to get us out. I already told you that. We have a job to do. That job is waiting for us in there.
He nodded out the viewport at the Ubiquitrate base.
With Thrawn and the Star Destroyer sitting between us and it?
Booster snorted.
Don't take this personally, General, and I'm sure you're a fine military mind and all that. But you try to slug it out with Thrawn, and we're all roast Dewback!
I know,
Bell Iblis said, his voice suddenly very deadly.
That's why we're not going to engage him. At least not the way he expects us to.
Booster eyed him cautiously. There was something about the other's face and voice that was starting to send shivers through him.
What are you talking about?
We have to get past the Relentless, Tarek,
Bell Iblis said quietly, gazing out the viewport.
And we have to disable it enough in the process that it won't be able to blast our slashers out of the sky before they can get to the computer extension and cut their way in.
What about the base's own weapons?
And we have to do it fast enough that the base's own weaponry won't have time to turn on us,
Bell Iblis agreed.
Add it all up, and there's only one way we can possibly pull it off.
Still gazing out the viewport, he seemed to brace himself.
As soon as we can break clear of the tractor beams, we're going to turn and drive as hard as we can straight for the Relentless. And we're going to ram it.
Booster felt the air go out of him in a silent rush.
You're not serious,
he breathed. Bell Iblis turned, looking him straight in the eye.
I'm sorry, Booster. Sorry about your ship. Sorry about letting you and your crew come aboard in the first place.
General, the helmsman called. We've got a 79-degree displacement now. That's the best we're going to get.
For another second, Bell Iblis held Booster's gaze. Then turning his eyes away, He stepped past him.
It will do, he said. Oh, weapons, commence firing at tractor beam emplacements.
Abruptly, out the viewport, a firestorm of turbolaser fire erupted, lancing outward from the angled hull in both directions.
And helm and sublad engines,
the general added calmly.
Stand by for full emergency power.
There he is,
Helico said, pointing.
Over there, just to starboard. I see him,
Hans said. For a minute there, he'd lost Carib's freighter in the swirling glare of the comet's tail.
You see any of the miners he was talking about? Not yet,
Helico said.
Perhaps he was mistaken.
Not likely,
Han growled, the hairs on the back of his neck starting to tingle. He might not agree that Carib could pick out Imperials just by their flying style, but he sure didn't doubt the guy could tell the difference between ore buckets and empty space.
I wonder where they could have gotten to.
Perhaps they're being masked by the tail,
Helico suggested.
They may be working on the back quarter of the comet's surface.
Miners never work back there,
Hans said, shaking his head.
The dust and ice foul up alluvial dampers something fierce.
Then where are they?
I don't know,
Hans said grimly.
But I'm starting to get a very bad feeling about it. Keep me a transmission to Carib's freighter, will you?
Helico's keyed the comm.
Ready. Carib?
Hans called.
You see anything?
Nothing,
the other's voice came back.
But they were here, Solo.
I believe you,
Hans said, throwing a quick look at the Falcon's weapons board. The quads were ready, keyed remotely down here to him.
I think maybe it's time for a real close look at the surface. See what might be tucked away in there out of sight.
Agreed. You want us to lead the way down?
That freighter of yours armed?
There was just the briefest of hesitations.
No, not really.
Then I'd better take point,
Hans said, throwing more power to the sublight engines.
Hang back and let me pass you.
Whatever you say.
Do you wish me to go to one of the weapons bays?
Helicos asked quietly. Han threw him a quick glance.
I thought Kaa Masi hated killing.
We do, Helico said soberly. But we also accept that there are times when killing a few is necessary for a greater good. This may well be one of those times.
Maybe,
Han grunted, easing way back on his speed as the Falcon shot past the action tube. They were starting to get close into the comet now, and he didn't want to run into some loose piece of rock that might suddenly decide to break off into their path.
Don't worry. Whatever they're hiding down there, I should be able to handle it okay by myself. It's not like you can cram a lot of firepower into one of those ore buckets at...
And right in the middle of his sentence, right before his eyes, the comet and the stars beyond it abruptly vanished. And in their place, its lights glowing evilly in the total blackness around it, was the dark shape of an Imperial Star Destroyer.
Han!
Helicos gasped.
What?
Cloak Star Destroyer!
Han snapped back, twisting the helm yoke viciously, the whole plan suddenly coming clear. That battle back there over Bothawi, all those ships beating each other into rubble, with a Star Destroyer waiting hidden here, ready to finish them all off and maybe burn Bothawi in the bargain. No survivors, no witnesses, only a battle everyone in the New Republic would blame everyone else for. And the civil war that single battle would spark might never end.
Get ready on the comm,
he told Helicos, as the Falcon veered hard around back toward the invisible edge of the cloaking shield.
The second we're clear...
The order choked off as he was abruptly thrown hard against his restraints. Beneath him, the Falcon jerked to the side like a wounded animal. The roar of the sublight engines mixing with the creaking of stressed joints and supports.
What is it?
Helicos gasped. Han swallowed hard. his hands tightening uselessly on the yoke.
It's a tractor beam,
he told the Kaamasi, throwing a desperate glance at the sensor display. If it was an edgewise grab, something marginal or tenuous, he might be able to wiggle his way out. But no, they had him. They had him solid. He looked up again, as a motion caught his eye. Carib's freighter, now inside the cloaking shield with him, twisting helplessly in the same invisible grip.
They've got us, Elagos,
he sighed, the bitter taste of defeat in his mouth.
They've got us both.
Chapter 38. They ran into two more of the disguised Connor nets along the way, both of which Mara insisted on tripping and disposing of. Luke wasn't convinced himself that that was necessary, but on the other hand, he couldn't see how it could hurt either. If the first net hadn't triggered any alarms, and there was no indication it had, then taking down the other two probably wouldn't do anything either. And at least it gave the insectoid service droids something to do that was back out of their way. The background hum had also increased as they traveled down the tunnel, reaching a volume where Luke could definitely tell it was coming from above them. The fortress's huge power generator, undoubtedly, sealed safely away inside solid rock beyond their reach. And eventually, after perhaps 100 meters, the tunnel ended in a large, well-lit room. I was right, Mara murmured from Luke's side as they stood together at the archway entrance. I knew he'd have a place like this stashed away. Even in his own fortress, hidden away from his own people. I just knew it. Luke nodded silently, gazing into the chamber. It was roughly circular, dome-shaped at the top, 60 meters across at the base, and a good 10 high at the center, all carved out of solid rock. A 3-meter-wide ring of tiled floor ran around the outer edge at the level of the tunnel, dropping then a meter down to the main floor, which was also tiled. 5 meters up the sides, behind a protective railing, a balcony deeply indented into the rock ran 2/3 of the way around the room, its inner walls lined with electronic equipment. On the main floor, to their far right, was a more modest version of the command center they'd found in the upper floor of the Hand of Thrawn. This one was only a single ring of consoles, centered not on a galactic hollow, but on the wide, squat cylinder of a super-storage library computer information base. Again, as in the fortress above, a handful of glowing lights indicated the equipment was waiting, patiently on standby. The rest of the main floor was empty, except for a row of furniture lined up against one edge of the raised walkway beneath a plastic sheet. But all of that was just background, things to be peripherally noted and filed away into his mind for later evaluation. From the first moment he and Mara had entered the room, Luke's full attention had been focused on the deep alcove coming off the main room over to their left. Sealed there, behind a solid transparent steel wall, was a complete cloning apparatus. A Spa-Arty cylinder, wrapped in nutrient tubes and flash-learning cables, surrounded by support equipment, all of it tied into a humming fusion generator. And floating gently in the center of the cylinder, asleep, or perhaps not even yet truly alive, was a blue-skinned adult humanoid. A humanoid with an exceptionally familiar face. Grand Admiral Thrawn. 10 years, Luke said quietly. Just like you said. Just like you figured. He told them he'd return in 10 years. The old fraud, Mara muttered, the words in sharp contrast to the reluctant awe Luke could sense in her. He could sympathize. The alcove and its occupant were intimidating in their subtle grandeur, and in their equally quiet threat. Probably had the cycle set on a 10-year timer, and just reset it back to zero every time he dropped by for a visit. Probably, Luke agreed, tearing his eyes away from the almost hypnotic sight of the floating clone, and looking over at the ring of consoles at the other end of the room.
R2, get over there and find a computer jack you can link into. Start downloading everything you can find about the unknown region's area Thrawn opened up.
The little droid warbled acknowledgement and rolled past him to one of the half-dozen ramps leading from the outer ring down to the main floor. He made it down the ramp without tipping over and headed for the console ring, his wheels clattering rhythmically across the small gaps between the tiles as he went. He stopped beside one of the consoles, whistled a confirmation, then extended his computer jack and plugged in.
"He's in," Luke said, turning back to the cloning tank. "Come on. I want a closer look at this."
Together, he and Mara circled the room to the transparesteel wall.
"Don't touch it," Mara warned as he leaned in close. "It's probably wired with alarms."
"I wasn't going to," Luke assured her, peering inside. From this angle, he could see something that hadn't been visible from the archway.
"You see what else he's got in there with him?" "A couple of Islamari," Mara nodded. "Just in case a wandering Jedi happened by."
Thrawn was the type to think of everything.
"He sure was," Mara agreed. "Except maybe that lake out there."
Luke frowned.
"What do you mean?" "Over there," Mara said,
half turning and pointing across the room. Luke turned to look. There was the rock wall and the furniture beneath the plastic sheet, and the upper equipment balcony running around the dome above it.
"What exactly am I looking at?" he asked. "The water damage," she said, pointing again. "On the wall across from the tunnel mouth. See?"
"I do now," Luke said, nodding. The wall over there was subtly but definitely discolored, the stain marked with multiple vertical lines where water had seeped through the rock and dripped down. In fact, now that he was paying attention, he could see water oozing slowly through the rock in a dozen places.
"Child of Wind said the lake had been expanding," he said.
"Looks like it found a way in through the caverns." He turned back.
"I'd say our clone reached his 10-year mark just in time." "What do you think he'll be like?"
Mara asked, her voice sounding odd.
"I mean, how close to the original Thrawn will he be?"
Luke shook his head.
"That's an argument that's been going on for decades," he said. "With the same genetic structure, plus a flash learning pattern taken directly from the template, a clone should theoretically be completely identical to the original person. But despite that, they're never exactly the same. Maybe some of the mental subtleties get blurred over in transition. Or maybe there's something else unique inside us that a flash learning reader isn't able to pick up."
He nodded toward the clone.
"He'll presumably have all of Thrawn's memories. But will he have his genius? Or his leadership? Or his single-minded drive?" "I don't know."
He looked at Mara.
"Which I suppose leads to the question of what we do with him." "Funny you should ask that," Mara said pensively. 10 years ago, I'd have said flat out we blast our way in and get rid of him. Maybe even 5 years ago. But now, it's not so simple anymore."
Luke studied her profile, trying to sort through the mixture of emotions swirling through her.
"You really were spooked by all that talk about distant threats, weren't you?"
To his mild surprise, she didn't take offense.
"Fel and Park are worried about it," she reminded him. "You willing to bet they're both wrong?"
"Not really," Luke conceded, looking back at the clone.
"I'm just trying to imagine what having Thrawn suddenly show up would do to the New Republic. Widespread panic would be my guess, with Coruscant scrambling to find enough ships for a preemptive strike at what's left of the Empire." "You don't think they'd listen to what he had to say?"
"The way Thrawn carved his way through the New Republic the last time?" Luke shook his head.
"They wouldn't trust him for a minute." "You're probably right," Mara said. "Park said there were rumors he'd returned. Though how a rumor like that could get started, I don't know. But he didn't mention what the reaction had been."
"And rumors are a lot different than if he actually walked in the door," Luke pointed out. For a minute they stood there in silence. Then, Luke took a deep breath.
I suppose it's an academic argument, really, when you come down to it, he said. Whatever the original Thrawn might have done, this particular being hasn't done anything wrong. Certainly nothing that deserves a summary execution.
True,
Mara agreed. Though I imagine you'd have trouble convincing some people of that. Next question, then. Do we leave him here to wake up normally and join our friends upstairs? Bearing in mind that they're not too happy with either us or the New Republic at the moment. Or do we see if we can speed up the growth process and take him back to Coruscant?
Luke whistled softly under his breath.
You sure know how to find the hard questions, don't you? I've never had to find a hard question in my life, she countered tartly. They've always found me first.
Luke smiled.
I know the feeling. I'd rather you knew the answer, she said. Bottom line, could Coruscant handle it?
From across the room came a sudden flurry of warbling. Luke turned to see R2 bouncing back and forth excitedly on his stubby legs.
What is it? He called. You find the unknown region's data?
The droid twittered impatiently.
Okay, I'll be right there,
Luke soothed him, heading for the nearest ramp down to the main floor. He started to pass the sheet-covered furniture and paused, looking at the collection. There were half a dozen chairs of various types under there, plus a bed, a table, and a couple of things that looked like storage end tables.
What do you suppose this is all about? He called back to Mara. Looks like the stuff he'll need to make this place into a cozy little apartment once he's out,
Mara suggested, dropping down to the main floor and coming up beside him.
He'll want some time to recover, maybe get caught up with what's been happening out there over the past 10 years. In fact, I'd run you 10 to 1 that console ring's got a direct feed from whatever news data links they've got upstairs.
Yes, but why is it all piled here instead of laid out waiting for him?
Luke asked. It's not like Thrawn wouldn't have known what kind of arrangement his clone would like.
Interesting point,
Mara agreed, her voice suddenly uneasy. Luke threw her a look.
What is it?
I don't know,
she said slowly, looking around.
Something just suddenly felt wrong.
Luke looked around the room, too.
Nothing seemed threatening, but suddenly he was feeling it, too. Maybe we ought to get R2 and clear out of here, he suggested quietly. Take whatever he's got and just go.
Let's first see how much he's got,
Mara said. She turned back toward the droid and took a step.
Who dares disturb the sleep of Syndic Mithron Nerodo?
A deep voice thundered from above them. Luke dropped into a half-crouch, lightsaber reflexively raised above him. He looked up to an extraordinary sight. Above the railing and second-level equipment balcony, a large, ovate section of the stone ceiling was undulating like some sort of rocky fluid. Even as he watched, it slowly formed itself into a giant face looking down at them.
Who dares disturb the sleep of the Syndic Mithron Nerodo?
The voice repeated.
Now that's a nice trick, Mara murmured. Well, go ahead. Answer it.
Luke took a careful breath.
We're friends, Luke called. We mean the Syndic Mithron Nerodo no harm.
The fluid eyes seemed to focus on him.
Who dares disturb the sleep of the Syndic Mithron Nerodo?
Luke looked at Mara.
A recording?
Sounds like it,
she agreed tightly.
But what good does a recording...
Watch it!
But Luke was already spinning around, lightsaber flashing out into defensive position in front of him, as his own senses flared a warning. There were two of them, standing there on the upper section of floor, a pair of large, thick-set sentinel droids on treaded bases, each with a heavy blaster gripped in its right hand.
Get behind me!
Luke snapped to Mara, taking a short step in front of her.
Just in time. Even as he stretched out to the force, both sentinels opened fire. Stupid,
He heard Mara snarl from behind him. A big fat diversion. The oldest trick on the list. And I fell for it like some dumb farm kid.
Watch your language,
Luke warned. The Sentinels were good, laying out a systematic targeting pattern that would have quickly taken out most opponents. So far, though, he was easily staying ahead of them.
Can you do anything about them?
Her reply was a spitting of blaster fire over his shoulder, raking across the Sentinel's joints and glowing eyes. But there was no effect.
No good. The armor's too thick for my blaster, she said. Let me try...
Watch it! He's moving!
Luke cut her off. The Sentinel on the left had suddenly started rolling on its treads along the raised floor ring toward the far end of the room. Blaster still firing.
Luke clenched his teeth, stretching out harder to the force, feeling sweat breaking out on his forehead.
With the source of the blaster bolts now coming from two different directions, and with the separation between them growing ever wider, it was becoming harder and harder for him to physically get the lightsaber blade back and forth fast enough to block the shots. Behind him, he heard the snap hiss as Mara ignited her own lightsaber, followed by a sudden yelp and a muffled thud.
What happened?
Luke snapped, not daring to take his attention off the Sentinels.
Don't try to walk,
Mara warned, her voice inexplicably coming from the floor beneath him.
Thrawn left another surprise for unwanted guests.
Luke frowned.
What do you mean?
Out of the corner of his eye, he saw the blue-white blade of her lightsaber cut across one of the shots from the more distant Sentinel, now at the far end of the room.
Okay, I've got this one, she said. If you can spare a second, take a look at the floor.
Letting the force guide his hands, Luke risked a quick look down at his feet. One glance was all he needed. The floor had sprouted loops of green-black cord that had formed themselves into a tangled mass around their feet.
Looks like they extruded themselves out of the cracks between the tiles,
Mara went on.
First step I took, my foot tried to catch in one of the loops.
Clever, Luke agreed tightly.
I guess that rules out any chance of running for it. At least now we know why all the furniture's stacked off to the side,
Mara added.
You don't want to clutter your killing field with a lot of stuff the victims might be able to hide behind. Luke, this other sentinel's still coming.
Luke risked a glance. The second sentinel had rounded the far end of the room and was now rolling steadily around the other side. And in maybe 10 seconds, it would reach a point directly across from Mara.
Quick, before it gets any closer,
he told her, easing a little to his left so he could again defend against both sentinels.
Use your lightsaber on it.
Right,
Mara said. And through his haze of concentration, he felt her emotional twinge at the memory of her less-than-perfect handling of the weapon back of the chamber where they'd taken out all of the stalactites and stalagmites together. But the moment passed, and as he leaned hard into the effort of blocking the barrage of shots, he saw the flash as her lightsaber windmilled across the room toward the sentinel. It sliced cleanly into the intersection of head and body, and then... abruptly, the blue-white blade vanished.
What happened?
Luke demanded.
Blast it,
Mara snarled. Out of the corner of Luke's eye, he saw the blade reappear, swing into the sentinel, and again vanish.
He put a layer of cortosis ore under the armor.
Then go for the blaster,
Luke said.
Right.
The blue-white blade sizzled out again. There was a crackle of broken metal and plastic. And suddenly that point of danger faded from Luke's mind.
Good job,
he called to Mara, shifting his full attention to the sentinel in front of him.
Now get around here and do the same thing to this one.
He swiveled back again, getting his lightsaber blade around just in time. Suddenly the sentinel on Mara's side had started shooting again.
Watch it!
Mara snapped a belated warning.
It had another blaster holstered for its left hand. Oh, shabbit!
What? Never mind, Luke growled. In response to Mara's attack, the sentinel facing him had now drawn a second blaster from concealment with its left hand.
He's got a second blaster for the right, too!
I got it.
Luke cut her off, leaning still harder into his defense.
with twice as many shots coming in now from each of the Sentinels. They were in worse shape than they had been before. A missed blaster bolt sizzled painfully across the top of his left shoulder.
Sorry,
Mara said, her back pressed against his now, the hum of her lightsaber like an angry insect behind him.
What do we do now?
Luke grimaced. The row of Islamari-equipped Chiss he'd faced up in the fortress had been bad enough. But at least there, they'd had the option of shooting their opponents if defense became too difficult. Here, trapped in the middle of an open room, caught in a crossfire from two tireless droids who couldn't be killed, with tangling cords around their feet, precluding any chance of fast escape.
Luke!
Mara called again over the sound and fury.
You hear me?
I heard you! I heard you! He snapped back.
So what do we do?
Luke swallowed hard. I have no idea. Beneath Leia, the Predominance's great bulk shuddered as another proton torpedo got through the Ashori defenses, its violent explosion ripping another piece out of the hull. Ahead, out the main bridge canopy, the sky was a tangle of turbolaser blasts splashing across their shields or occasionally burning through to vaporize layers of metal or transparasteel. But in that sudden, heart-stopping moment, none of that mattered. Not the battle, not her own life, not even the terrible threat of civil war. With that flicker of distant emotion, that sudden tremor in the Force, one thing alone had surged to overriding importance for her. Somewhere out there, Han was in deadly danger.
Captain Avmaru!
She shouted over the din of the bridge, crossing quickly toward the command console. Two guards raised their blasters warningly. Without thinking, Leia stretched out with the Force to turn the weapons aside as she passed.
Captain, I must speak with you right away.
I am busy, Counselor!
The assuring captain snarled, not even bothering to look at her.
You'll be busier than you care to be if you don't listen to me,
Leia bit out, straining with all her strength toward the wispy, unclear sensation that was Han. His emotions were still seething with danger and threat and helpless fury. But try as she might, she couldn't penetrate through the emotion and the distance to his underlying thoughts. But there was one thing that was very clear.
There's some new threat waiting out there,
she told Avmaru.
One you're completely unaware of.
Other threats are meaningless,
Avmaru all but screamed.
There can be no other concern but the Diamolan attackers around us.
Captain, I...
She broke off at a feathery touch on her arm.
It's no use, Counselor,
Gafferson said, his long face tight and almost bitter.
Oh, he can't and won't think that far ahead. Not with his ship under immediate attack. Can you tell me what this threat is?
Leia looked out the canopy, trying to pierce the dazzling lethal light show outside.
Han's in danger,
she said.
Where? How?
I don't know,
she said, her stomach twisting with her own sense of helplessness.
I can't pick up his thoughts clearly enough.
Who else might know?
Gaversum asked. Leia took a deep breath, forcing calmness into her mind. Gaversum was right. What Han needed was for her to put aside her emotions and think clearly.
Elagos was with him on the Falcon,
she said, stretching out again with the Force. But there was nothing.
I can't even sense him.
Ooh, who else might know?
Gaversum persisted.
Someone closer at hand?
Leia looked out at the battle again, a sudden tentative flicker of hope stirring in her.
Lando. Han might have said something to Lando.
Then we must talk to him,
Gaversum said firmly.
I will go speak to the captain about piercing the Diabolan jamming. In the meantime, is there anything your Jedi skills can do about it?
Leia took a deep breath.
I don't know, she said. Let me try.
A
I tell you, this can't wait, Lando insisted, throwing every bit of urgency and intimidation he could muster into his voice. I have to speak to High Counselor Organa Solo right away. The whole fate of the New Republic might well hang on the edge, not to mention your own lives.
Really?
Senator Myotomia said, his voice icy calm. Diamala, Lando knew, were notoriously hard to read, but it was abundantly clear the senator wasn't impressed.
And what is the nature of this threat?
My friend Han went out to take a look at that comet out there, Lando said. I was watching him on macro binoculars, and he just vanished. Myotomia's cheeks creased.
You mean he crashed?
I mean he vanished, Lando insisted. Right out in the open.
Yet how truly open is the region around a comet?
The Diamal pointed out, an ear twitching.
He may have veered into the gases of the tail, or you may have lost sight of him briefly in the glare of sunlight from the surface.
Lando grimaced. Not only was Myotomia not convinced, he wasn't even going to give it a fair hearing. But Lando knew what he had seen.
All right, then, he said between clenched teeth. In that case, I'm calling in the favor you owe me.
Both ears twitched this time.
What favor is this?
I gave you a ride to Coruscant from Silpar, remember? Lando reminded him. You've never paid me back for that.
You stated at the time that you would not require any payment other than our conversation.
I lied, Lando said evenly. And I want my favor, now.
Myotomia eyed him darkly.
We are in a combat situation.
This won't jeopardize that.
Lando gestured at the bridge, lying beyond the transparisteel wall of the observation deck he and Myotomia were standing on.
All I want is for the jamming of the predominance lifted, just on Counselor Organa Solo's personal comlink frequency. Just that one frequency, that's all.
The Diamal shook his head.
I cannot gamble that such an action would not create additional danger for Diamalan lives and goods.
He turned away, facing the battle again. Lando swallowed a curse. Looking past him and the besieged Ashori's ship at the comet, glowing with such deceptive serenity out beyond the fighting. Han had asked for his help, had trusted him, and he did know what he'd seen.
All right,
he said, stepping squarely in front of Myotomia again. It was time to put his money where it counted.
A gamble, you say? Fine, let's gamble.
He pointed out the viewport at the Ashori ship.
Here's the bet. You let me talk to Leia right now, and if the threat turns out not to be as serious as I claim it is, you and the Diamala will get my mining and casino operation on Var.
The senator's ears twitched.
Are you serious?
Deadly serious, Lando said. My friend's in danger, and I'm the only one who can help him.
For a long moment, the Diamal stared at him.
Very well,
he said at last.
High Counselor Organa Solo's private comlink frequency only, and for no more than 2 minutes.
Done, Lando nodded. How fast can you arrange it?
Myotomia turned toward the observation deck's intercom and spoke rapidly in the Diamalan language. He was answered in kind. There was one more quick exchange.
It is done,
he said, turning back to Lando.
Your 2 minutes are running.
Lando already had his comlink out and keyed.
Leia?
Lando!
Her relieved voice came back instantly.
I was hoping to get through to you. Han's in trouble.
I know, Lando said. He went with Carib to check out the comet and asked me to watch him with macro binoculars. They cut in close to the surface and then just disappeared.
What do you mean, disappeared? As if they'd crashed?
No, Lando said grimly. As if they'd dipped inside a cloak and shield.
He heard her sharp intake of air.
Lando, we've got to get over there right away. If there's an Imperial ship hiding out there...
Hey, no argument here, Lando said. But I've already used up all my favors getting this call through.
All right,
Leia said, her voice suddenly dark.
It's up to me, then.
What are you gonna do? Lando asked.
I'm going to help Han,
she said, her voice as cold as he'd ever heard it.
Stay clear. You don't want to get involved in this.
The transmission clicked off.
Too late for that, Leia, he muttered at the dead comlink. Years and years too late.
Another barrage of turbolaser fire lanced out from the nearest of the two Golan weapons platforms, the spread targeting the group of starfighters harrying its flank. Wedge twisted his X-Wing safely between the shots and did a quick check of the rest of his squadron. As with the last such salvo, and the four or five before it, none of them had taken any damage. Neither, as far as he could tell, had anyone else in the attack fleet. Bel Iblis's strategy of staying just at the edge of the Golan's kill zone had so far paid off. But that strategy was about to change.
All fighter wings, this is Paris.
The voice of the Peregrine's fighter commander came tautly through his headset.
Captain Drinaw has confirmed that General Bel Iblis is definitely in trouble in there.
Wedge grimaced, wondering what about the situation had needed any confirmation in the first place. Nose to nose with another Imperial Star Destroyer, pinned in place by probably every heavy tractor beam the Ubiquitrate base could bring to bear?
Look, they're firing!
Rogue Five snapped.
Everything they've got looks like.
I see it,
Wedge said, gazing through the separating distance at the blaze of turbolaser fire flashing out of the Errant Venture. His last faint hope that Bel Iblis might still be able to talk his way out of this, evaporating like morning mist at sunrise. If he'd opened fire on the base, it meant the bluff had failed. It also meant he was running low on time. That second Star Destroyer, not to mention the Ubiquitrate base commander, wasn't just going to sit there while Bel Iblis vaped their tractor emplacements and got away. Trinaw and the rest of the fleet command staff aboard the Peregrine had clearly come to the same conclusion.
Okay, fighters,
Paris said.
The fleet's going in, and we're going in hard. Your job is to draw fire away from the main ships, help wherever you can to punch a hole in the defense perimeter, and be ready to run screen when the Imperials finally launch their own fighters. All wings acknowledge and prepare.
Rogue Leader, copy,
Wedge said, then keyed for the squadron's private frequency.
Well, Rogues, you've all had a look at the perimeter. Any thoughts on where the weak spots are?
Maybe,
Rogue 12 said.
Seems to me the turbo lasers on the starboard side of that second Golan have a slight flutter.
You sure?
Rogue 3 asked.
I didn't notice anything.
It's small, but it's there,
Rogue 12 said.
It may be just enough to leave a small gap between... General Antilles,
a new voice cut in. Wedge frowned. It was a familiar voice, but not one of his squadron.
This is Antilles,
he confirmed cautiously.
This is Talancard. How are things?
It took Wedge a second to find his voice.
Card? What in blazes are you doing here?
He demanded.
To be perfectly honest, trying to get past your forces. Is Commander Horn there with you?
I'm here,
Rogue Nine said.
What do you want?
I want to collect on a favor you owe me. The one we discussed the last time we were together on the Errant Venture. Remember?
There was an exasperated sounding noise in Wedge's headset.
Card, are you crazy? We're in the middle of a battle here.
Which is precisely why I need the favor now,
Card said.
I need you to escort me through the New Republic lines.
To where?
Rogue Nine countered.
In case you hadn't noticed, on the other side of our lines is an Imperial Ubiquitrate base.
Which, conveniently, happens to be my destination.
Wedge snorted gently.
The wild card must be a lot better armored than I thought.
The Imperials won't be a problem. I have a high-level code for getting through their lines. My problem is your lines.
Look, Card, I don't know what you're up to,
Rogue Nine said.
And frankly, right now, I don't really care. But we have a job to do here.
Perhaps I can make that job unnecessary,
Card said, a sudden edge in his voice.
You get me inside, and I may be able to stop this battle completely.
Really?
Rogue Two said, his voice suddenly suspicious.
May I ask how exactly you plan to do that?
There was a slight pause, and Wedge could picture Card smiling that mysterious smile he was so fond of.
Let's just say I'm holding the ultimate bargaining chip.
And that would be...
All wings, this is Paris.
The fighter commander's voice came on.
Run to formation. We're heading in.
Wedge took a deep breath. They were under official orders now, with no room for maneuvering or stalling or anything else. But General Bell Iblis's life was on the line here.
Card, this is Antilles, he said. Where are you?
Coming up behind and above the Peregrine. Are you starting an attack?
Something like that,
Wedge said, checking his rear scanner. The wild card was there, all right, hanging a respectful distance back from the New Republic sentry line.
Stay put. We'll be right there. Rogues, let's go.
He turned the X-Wing hard over and headed toward their rear. There was a click in his headset as someone keyed to his personal frequency.
Wedge, what are we doing?
Rogue Nine demanded.
We're under orders. Look, if this is about this so-called favor I owe him...
I'm not worried about favors right now, Corrin,
Wedge assured him.
But you heard what Card said. He's got an Imperial code for getting through the perimeter.
Yes, I remember. But his having an access code won't do us any good.
Ordinarily, no, Wedge agreed, smiling tightly. But also remember what Rogue 12 said about that turbolaser flutter. If we guide Card in under that particular bank, and if we then stay clustered real close behind him...
Rogue 9 hissed thoughtfully.
That might just do it.
It's worth a try anyway,
Wedge said. Because if they could get in behind the perimeter, they'd have a far better shot at knocking out the tractor beam emplacements that held the Aaron Venture trapped. And the faster they knocked out those emplacements, the sooner Bell Iblis would be able to turn his ship around and make a run for safety.
Wedge,
Rogue Nine said, his voice sounding odd.
You don't suppose Card really can stop the battle, do you?
Wedge started to shake his head, paused. This was Corrin Horn, Jedi, asking the question.
Not really, he said cautiously. The Imperials want Bell Iblis, that much is for sure. The only reason I can think of why he'd let them go is if they got something they wanted even more.
That's what I was thinking, too,
Rogue Nine said, his voice still odd.
So why am I also thinking Card really does have a shot at this?
Wedge felt a shiver tingle the back of his neck.
I don't know, he said grimly. All I know is that he's our best shot of getting Bell Iblis and Booster out of there alive. Right now, that's all I care about.
They had reached the wild card now, and Wedge pulled his fighter around in a sharp turn into forward escort position.
Okay, Card. Here we go,
he said, double-checking that the rest of the squadron was in position.
Stay close and follow me.
Chapter 39.
The Sentinel droid continued its attack, systematically sending its fiery bolts of death in Mara's direction. Her lightsaber leaped to meet each one, hands twisting and turning and jabbing the weapon at the guidance of the Force. She knew her hands were moving, just as she knew that her teeth were clenched tightly together and that there were drops of sweat rolling down her face. But she couldn't feel them, couldn't feel any of it. So focused was her mind, so locked into the terrible struggle for survival, that there was nothing else in the universe that seemed able to penetrate into her consciousness. Not the rest of the chamber, not the shape of the Sentinel dimly visible behind the dazzling glare of the blaster bolts, not even her own body. Nothing but the blasters and her lightsaber. And Luke.
It was a strange sensation.
The small part of her mind that was still free to wonder about such things realized. Standing back to back, stretched out so deeply together to the force, it was as if their minds had literally melded together to become a single entity. She could feel his mental and physical strain as he maintained his own defense, could sense his reliance on the Force, and his desperate search for a plan to get them out of this, and his deep concern for the woman standing there with him. In one way, it was almost like a logical extension of the brief emotional contacts they'd had throughout this trip. But in another way, it was something completely new, like nothing she'd ever before experienced. Because within the depth of that mental rapport, she suddenly and totally knew Luke Skywalker. Knew everything about him. His hopes and fears, his successes and failures, his strengths and weaknesses, his highest joys and his deepest and most private sorrows. She saw into his innermost spirit, to the depths of his heart, to the very core of his being. And she knew that even as he lay open before her eyes, so also her heart and spirit were open before his. Yet it wasn't frightening or humiliating as she might have expected, as she would have expected. It was instead something completely exhilarating. Never before had she experienced such a depth and closeness to another person. A person who understood her as intimately as she understood him. Never had she known such a relationship could even exist. And never before had she realized how badly she wanted such a relationship. And that was, in its way, the most surprising part of all. To suddenly realize, after so many years, how much her determination to lock herself away from others had ended up hurting her. Had stunted her own growth and life, just as her stubborn refusal to accept the responsibility of her Jedi abilities had limited their growth. It was an amazing insight, particularly coming as it did in the midst of the fire and heat of a battle. She could only regret that the understanding hadn't come to her sooner, instead of now. Now that she was about to die. Because her death was indeed close at hand, one way or another. Already she could feel her muscles tiring before the Sentinel's onslaught, and knew that she couldn't maintain her defense more than a few minutes more at the most. She had to act now, while she still had the strength to do so, or Luke would die too. Because while the plan she'd come up with might eliminate the threat from the Sentinel in front of her, there was no way she could take out both of its blasters fast enough to keep a killing shot from reaching her. Fleetingly, she thought of Corran Horn and his ability to absorb and dissipate energy. But that had never been one of her talents, and there was certainly no time for her to learn the technique now. No. She would throw her lightsaber at her chosen target, and the Sentinel would shoot her. She would die. All she could hope for was to cling to light long enough to finish what had to be done. No, Mara! No! Was that her thought, she wondered? Or was it Luke's? I have to, Luke! That one was hers. Through her own fears and regrets, she could feel his sudden surge of desperate emotion as he tried to come up with a way she would not have to die. But there wasn't one. Mara had already considered every possibility, and there simply wasn't any way Luke could hold off four blasters by himself when two of them were firing at his back this way. But if she could just live long enough to carry this through, using her body to shield him until the Sentinel facing her could be eliminated. While I still have the strength, she reminded herself. And the time was now. She took a deep breath. No! The emotion broke through her black determination. Wait! Look! She had no attention to spare to look anywhere but at the Sentinel and its blasters. But she didn't have to. Luke had already seen the critical new factor, and now the image flowed through the Force into her mind. Off to her right, his little electric arc welder extended ahead of him like a weapon, R2 was rolling determinedly along the upper floor ring toward her attacker. Her first thought was to wonder what in blazes had taken the little droid so long to get his metal rear over here to help. Only then realizing how little time had actually elapsed since the battle began. Her second, somewhat irreverent thought, was to note that R2 had chosen her sentinel to attack instead of Luke's, and to wonder if the Skywalker tendency toward overprotectiveness had rubbed off on him. Her third thought was that Luke was right. This might be the break she needed. The opening for her plan to succeed without her having to die in the process. Maybe. R2 was almost to the sentinel now. A bluish spark arcing across the welder contacts. The sentinel was perfectly aware of him, of course. The only question was what it would do about it. And then, an image flashed into Mara's mind. A picture of her and Luke lying on the floor amid the tangle of trip cords down there. She felt herself gasp. Was that a vision of the future? Of them lying dead together? Was her plan doomed to failure? You see? Luke's emotion broke through the sudden fear. You understand? And then the image cleared, and she indeed saw what he meant. Not a vision of death, but a hope of life. Luke's own last-second contribution to her plan. Got it! She sent back her understanding. Get ready. She felt her teeth clenching even harder, lightsaber still flashing against the Sentinel's attacks, and prepared herself. R2 was almost to the Sentinel, his arc welder still sparking. And with a casual and contemptuous ease, the Sentinel swung its left arm over, placed the side of the blaster in that hand against R2's dome, and shoved the little droid over to land flat on his back. And for that half second, only one of his blasters was firing. Now! Mara reacted instantly, letting her right leg collapse beneath her to send her toppling over onto her right side. Luke fell right along with her, his back pressed against hers the whole way down. They hit the floor. There was probably a jolt of pain in her shoulder from the impact, but Mara wasn't aware of it. And Luke flipped over onto his back to face upward toward the ceiling. And with that single move, suddenly, there were no longer two attacks coming from totally opposite directions. Now it was merely two attacks coming from a pair of widely spaced opponents, both of whom were effectively in front of him. And that was something he could handle. Go! His command came as the green white of his lightsaber flashed past over her head, deflecting a shot away from her face. Mara didn't need the prompting. Already, her lightsaber was spinning its way toward the sentinel. A quick slash, and the blaster in its right hand had shattered to uselessness. Its other hand was already swinging back toward her. The lightsaber changed direction and slashed again, and the sentinel's second blaster was similarly gone. There was a short rumbling roar from the big droid. Apparently, it had enough sentience to be annoyed at having been outmaneuvered this way. But it was also smart enough to know the disadvantage was only temporary. That her lightsaber couldn't harm it directly, at least not fast enough to do any good. And its designers had also clearly prepared for such an eventuality. Two more compartments along its lower sides had popped open, and the Sentinel's hands were already digging into them for another set of replacement weapons. But with luck, it would never have a chance to use them. Mara had already brought her lightsaber around in front of the Sentinel, turning it to point blade first toward the big droid. Now, grunting with the effort, she drove it forward. Not uselessly into the Sentinel and its cortosis or shell, but straight past it, burying the blue-white blade in the water-stained wall behind it. The jet of water that burst out around the handle was instant and violent. Some of the spray reaching all the way to where she and Luke lay on the floor 30 meters away. Mara felt a sudden twinge of uneasiness at the force of the flow. But it was too late to stop now. Holding the weapon in against the pressure, she spun it around in a 10-centimeter diameter circle. The hilt more than once nearly vanishing from her view behind the widening spray of water coming out through the crack she was cutting. The Sentinel turned its head to see what was happening, lifted its blasters toward the lightsaber, and with a last burst of effort,
Mara finished the cut. The stone plug came blasting out of the wall with the speed of a proton torpedo, slamming directly into the Sentinel's thick torso with armor-crushing force and knocking the big droid helplessly off the upper ring down onto the main floor. Mara caught a glimpse of crumpled metal, saw that the stream of water that had driven the plug was now shooting across the room over her head. And suddenly, a foam-crested wave slammed into and over her from the opposite direction. With her mind still in the tunnel vision of Jedi defense mode, the wave caught her completely off guard. She felt herself being lifted and thrown by the wild surf as her feet were somehow pushed clear of the tangling trip cords and scrambled madly for something to hang on to. Her left hand caught another bunch of the cords, and she hung on grimly, trying to orient herself. Another wave washed over her, tearing her grip away, and once again she found herself being spun around in the turbulence. She clawed her way to the surface, caught a breath that seemed to be half air and half foam, shook the water out of her eyes to see another wave surging toward her. And then, a pair of hands caught her under the arms, and with a tug that felt like it was going to tear her in half, she was suddenly arcing upward through the air. There was a jolt as her back slammed into something hard. One of the two hands holding her fell away as the other tightened its grip. "Here, hold on!" Luke shouted in her ear. She half-turned in his single-handed grip, saw the railing to the upper equipment balcony there beside her, and grabbed onto it. "Got it!" "Hang on. I'm going back for R2. Letting go of the railing, he dropped back into the water. With an effort, Mara pulled herself up the railing and over onto the balcony floor. Below her, she could see, the room had become a surging mass of frothing water. And it was filling up fast. Much faster than it should have, she realized uneasily. And suddenly she saw why. The small, neat hole she'd cut in the wall was no longer either small nor neat. 4 or 5 square meters of the water-stained section had given way around it, and the lake of small fish was pouring in through the opening. Already it was halfway up the wall to the ledge where she sat. A movement across the room caught her eye. Luke, hanging on to some protrusion in the wall, waving toward her.
"I'm here!" she shouted over the roar of the water. "What do you need?"
In answer, the top of R2's dome rose a few centimeters above the waves. Bracing herself, Mara stretched out with the force and lifted the droid toward her. It was harder than she'd expected it to be. Far harder than it ought to have been. The droid rose over the water with...